podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abena, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, everyone. I am joined by Ruth Lilly, who is the media producer for At Cancer Rugby, which is Rugby Against Cancer. Welcome, Ruth. Welcome to the Mall Over Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to join you.
It's always nice to have a new debutant. It's a new voice for people to listen to as well. So I hope you're all well.
Yep, all good. All good. Getting excited for this weekend's event, to be honest. The official big countdown's on with five days to go.
Amazing. Well, we'll come on to that in just a second, which is something that is why you're on, to plug the big event for the Rugby Against Cancer, big trek this weekend. But first of all, like, can you give us a bit of a background for those people that don't know? You know, where did Rugby Against Cancer come from? Obviously, it's fairly self-explanatory what it's about, but, you know, how did it get started?
So I joined them last year, but before that there was a group of guys who play down in Hampshire, a couple of teams involved, and they just had this idea to run an event to raise money for cancer charities. And I think like the first event just absolutely blew up. They didn't expect as many people to turn up for the match, and they, you know, surpassed their expectations on fundraising, and it sort of just went from there really. And they've been putting on Rugby Against Cancer matches for the past few years. I joined them last, I think about May time, April, May time. And since then, in November, we got official charity status. So it's all sort of full steam ahead on growing the charity, getting out there, everybody, you know, getting the name out there so people can, you know, apply for help if they need to.
Oh, that's amazing. And obviously, cancer charities are something that's close to so many people's hearts. I know I've got personal stories. I bet there's not one person out there that hasn't been touched in one way, shape or form by cancer. So it's amazing that there's something specific to rugby out there that's looking to help. I mean, you mentioned some of the rugby matches there. Is there any other events that have been in the past other than sort of rugby matches?
So this, we have done two treks. The first trek, which would have been, I'm trying to remember years now, 2019, I think, where they walked from Portsmouth to Twickenham Stadium for the Army-Navy match. Last year, they had the second trek, which walked from Twickenham Stadium back to Portsmouth. And we raised something like £17,000, I think, on the second one. This weekend is the final, third and final trek, which sees them walking from Guy's Cancer Care Centre in central London all the way back down to Portsmouth. And it's the biggest event at the furthest distance and the most amount of people taking part.
That's incredible. I mean, I've been looking at the Just Giving page, and I can see like the 30 grand target's been absolutely smashed to smithereens. Which is fantastic news, you know, just over £40,000 raised to date. I assume that Portsmouth Rugby Club is one of the clubs that have been sort of in this from the very start.
So our founder, Aaron, plays for them and has connections down there. So there's quite a few of them are sort of based in the Portsmouth area. So they've always been sort of central to some of the organising of previous events and where they've played matches before.
Amazing. And as I say, hopefully the weather's good this weekend. That always helps. Can people still get involved?
They can. One, they can donate online. Or if they are in the London, Hampshire or sort of Surrey area, if they look at where any of our checkpoints are, we're trying to keep up to date with the times and stuff. And they can come down, cheer the walkers on, drop money in the pots, you know, give a bit of a morale boost on the route because they are walking nonstop through the night. So every little bit of morale boost at any checkpoint is just going to be absolutely needed, basically.
Yeah. Is there and you say on the website or on Twitter where people can find the route that the guys are following?
Yep. So the route is on our Just Giving page. So if you search Rugby Against Cancer or the final trek, you should be able to find it in the link from there. But it'll be all over all of our socials as well. So we're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. If you just search Rugby Against Cancer, you'll find us, and we're, you know, Friday night we'll be posting it, and then we'll keeping people updated Saturday, Sunday, until the finish line.
Awesome. So, like, how long are you expecting it to take?
So it's 80 miles, There's 63 walkers, and we're splitting them between six groups. They'll sort of be sort of 10, 20 minutes apart at each checkpoint. And the target is about 32 hours. We're hoping 32 hours. We're hoping to arrive at Portsmouth. We leave London from 8:30 on Saturday morning, and we're hoping to arrive in Portsmouth about 5:00 on the Sunday afternoon.
Perfect, almost perfect timing. As I say, the weather's looking promising for the weekend as well, which would really help.
Yeah, let's hope, because at the moment it's thunderstorms right now. Oh, so hoping it can.
I mean, it's been hailstoning down here this morning, and we're nearly in June. I just find it incredible. I assume you're taking part as well. You keep saying we, so you're putting yourself through it as well.
I'm not. I am. I'm filming it, but I'm going to walk the first sort of 20 miles from London, out towards sort of Hampton area. And then, I will be driving the rest, because I've got to film it at the same time and take photographs and all that.
Yeah, well, you know, it takes all sorts. Support crew and all that, equally as important.
Yeah, we do have 20 people on the support crew. So lots of volunteers getting involved as well. So it's nice to see that people want to, even if they can't take part in the Ultra Challenge, they're hopping on board to volunteer and help out.
Absolutely. Plenty of hydration, plenty of snacks.
Yes, definitely.
Plenty of plasters, just in case. I hope everyone's broken in their walking boots or trainers or whatever they decided to walk in.
Yeah, we did do a lot of recommendation during the training to make sure they did all the different pairs of trainers that they're going to wear, the different socks that they're going to wear. We had Compi donate loads of blister plasters. We've had Sport Tape donate tape and stuff to keep them together. And yeah, it's just been a crazy organising it. But can't wait for Saturday for all to kick off, really.
Excellent. And there's some rugby on at the weekend as well. So hopefully people can put their headphones in, and if they're not, you know, as they're stomping away, listen to the rugby on Five Live or wherever it's being broadcast.
That is true. Yeah, they could. I don't think they will do during the London leg, because I think everyone will just sort of be buzzing. Yeah. But maybe towards the evening.
As it gets into the sticks. And you never know, people might locate some rugby related podcasts that they might want to listen to.
Exactly.
And that's right. And there's loads of them. Are there any obviously we'll tweet out all of the contact information, all of your social media, all of that sort of stuff. Is there any events coming up in the future? Is there anything, any plans coming up after the trek that you're able to tell us about?
So we have the first match of the summer for us, which is Rugby Against Cancer versus the Pacific Islanders Rugby. I think I said that correctly. And then we also have two South Sea Super Socials tournaments. So they're 10s tournaments. There's a women's one and there's a men's one. They're on two different dates just because of venues and things. And then we're already planning for future events, sort of looking forward sort of from next year onwards. But they're a surprise, so I can't tell you those yet.
No, that's fine. So, well, we're kind of planning a mall over invitational rugby match in Cornwall in October. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is off the back of this chat, and I'm obviously inspired by all of the stuff, is suggest that, you know, our listeners, we've got people coming from all over the country to Newquay to come and play in this match. We're just going to try and get everyone together, and we'll see if we can do some fundraising at the same time for Rugby Against Cancer and try and make it a bit of an event as well as a big social, and hopefully we can raise a few quid and donate it to the cause as well. So
that's, you know, absolutely fantastic.
Slight exclusive that I've just decided right in this second, you know, so if the other guys are listening, that's what we're going to do. Rugby Against Cancer, that's what we'll support, and on the day we'll try and raise a bit of money for that.
That sounds great. And obviously if people know anybody who is affected by cancer, they can go on our website and they can request support and grants for things like that. So, you know, we're not just all about the fundraising, we are about the giving back to people who need it. So
yeah, and that's really important, you know, knowing that that support is there for people, you know, no matter how big or small or what they need. And, you know, sometimes it's just advice, sometimes it's just someone to talk to. And knowing that these organisations such as Rugby Against Cancer are there, you know, rugby's a big, there's a big thing about rugby being a family and a community and something that brings people together, isn't there? So, you know, being able to demonstrate that is super, and long may it continue.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, Ruth, thank you very much for your time today. It's been great to learn a little bit about it. And hopefully, you know, as a podcast and in general, we can get involved moving forward somehow, even if it's just promoting it and getting you on to talk about it on the podcast. And of course, with your ties to rugby and your day job, you're always welcome to come on the podcast and talk about some actual rugby if you want. I mean, most people get bored of listening to us most of the time. So, yeah, you're more than welcome to come on and chat some actual Premiership rugby.
Sounds good to me.
Awesome. Ruth, it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll catch up very soon. And best of luck for the weekend.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Cool.
Hello, good evening, and welcome.
It's lovely when it's someone else's turn, isn't it? Oh, sorry, mate. Sorry.
And welcome to this week's More Labour podcast, the only rugby podcast gives us the news, views, and reaction. Or with the West Country accent, you can find us on Twitter. We are at More Labour Podcast, More Labour Rugby Podcast on Facebook. And you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Apple Pods and lots of other good places. But not Alexa yet, Adam. Can't get it on Amazon Alexa yet. And I'm fucking fuming about it.
I work for them.
I know, yeah. It's your fault. You've got
the
long
stuff. I just suggested that you should do it. That's all, yeah. I did.
I can say to Alexa, play Long Snapper Podcast, and I can get Too Much Mark. Yet, I ask for the More Labour Podcast, and she plays nothing of the sort. Unbelievable. Well, as you may have guessed, like we all know, and for the previous interview with Ruth, you will already know, that we absolutely detest European rugby, especially this season, because it's been an absolute shit show, and the competition has been devalued by the ECPR and all that belong to it because of the stupid format that they tried to bring in. So with that in mind, and you've already heard the phenomenally dulcet tones of our resident quizmaster Adam Foxcroft from the Long Snapper Podcast, part of the More Labour Podcast conglomerate, then yes. It means one thing and one thing only.
Punching chat.
Now, Phil's here. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Ben's here. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Douglas is not here. He's at the darts. But he has recorded some answers that Adam is probably going to score once you've played them through your microphone.
Yeah, we'll see how this works.
So they may sound not very good. You may struggle to hear them. I've been assured that they're quite funny, a la as funny as Doug could be. But after listening to Doug talk to Eddie at the end of last week's rugby rant to banter for 20 minutes, where I got an absolute peppering between them, then I'm giving Andrews all he fucking gets this evening. So, let's get cracking, Adam, shall we? You're in charge. You know, for those who don't know, I mean, you can explain the rules.
I could explain the rules, but if you don't know them by now, frankly,
you will never.
No, I'm not going to explain the rules. You know, there'll be some questions, there'll be some answers, there'll be some sound effects that loosely resemble scores.
Sorry, but if you are listening to this for the first time and you hear arbitrary loud sound effects, it's part of the game. Don't complain about it.
Have people complained about that?
During Punching Chat last year, there were some complaints about random sound effects. I don't think they kind of got it, but yeah, there were.
So interestingly, we're on a very strict timescale here, and Russ has wasted 3.5 minutes of quality Punching Chat time doing his intro.
All right.
I'm going to crack on. A little bit of admin. The last time we did this, which was quite a while ago, we did defend the undefendable at the end, and I panicked and didn't give Doug the victory. And I should have given Doug the victory because he defended something that was quite frankly despicably undefendable. And I gave him the question. And I just had this panic of, I hope people don't think we mean this. I can't give Doug the victory. So, Doug, you can have some points. You're not here, so that makes the whole thing easier.
What did he defend?
It was something to do with Ryan Giggs. you may recall. Let's not dwell on it.
Was it to do with like having sex with his brother's wife or beating people? I mean, the beating people up came later, didn't it? So
it's best. Well, you can listen back. I'm sure it's there. Also, quick bit of admin. We were supposed to record yesterday, but Phil, it was your wedding anniversary. Is that right?
It was indeed. Yes, okay. It was. Yeah.
So there we go. That's the admin out of the way nicely for us.
But for prioritising trying to get laid over punch and chat.
Yeah, trying. Yeah.
Add the points back. There you go. Right. Question one. And if you've listened before, you'll know that we always start this with a rugby question. Obviously, we're doing this. The very fact that we're recording Punching Chat suggests that you, as Mallover hosts, really, really hate European rugby. But if you could scrap it, what would you replace it with? Ben, let's go to you first.
Well, I'm going to shock you. I like it. I like European rugby, despite what we said earlier. But I only really like it once it gets to the point where there's good teams in it. And I like it for its rarity value. So what I would do is the same thing I suspect one of the others is going to say in a minute. But I would also restrict it to once every other year. So when there's a Lions tour, I would prioritise the Lions tour over everything else and shove everything back a few weeks and make a bit of room for the French leagues and the English leagues to come to their conclusion before the Lions gets going. And I would do the same in a World Cup year. It'd be good for the World Cup, it'd be good for the Lions, and it would be good for the dreaded player welfare.
There we go. At this point, I'm going to test myself technically early. And let's hear from Doug for the first time. Douglas, this is going to be seamless, isn't it? Or everything about this. Let's give it a go.
So if I was going to replace European rugby with anything, obviously the obvious answer would be rest week, so that we can all have a bit of a break from this shit. I think that's why the majority of us don't participate in European rugby. It's like, how am I meant to get excited about in La Rochelle against Toulouse? I couldn't give less of a shit about either of them, to be honest.
There you go. That was Doug.
I mean, very, very Lensman-like, succinct and to the point.
Yeah, there's the points, Doug. There you go. He's in the lead. How about that? Phil, what's your answer?
So, I think part of the reason I don't like Europe is for the same reason that I don't really like the equivalent in football. And that's that they've created this structure based around having as many games to put on TV as possible. And so many of those games end up being meaningless. So what I would do is I'd take 48 teams. I'd take all of the top 14, all of the pro 14, all of the Premiership. And then I'd pick 8 sides from other countries in Europe. And I'd have a straight knockout, where the bottom 32 on ranking have a kind of pre-qualification round. 16 of those go through, meet the top 16, and a straight knockout competition all the way through. So every game ends up mattering. But then what I would do is, when you get down to the stage where there could be games on where you really don't give a shit about the teams that are playing, fill that time on TV with a lot of obscure sports a la grandstand in the 90s. I want to see some kabaddi on telly. Just filling that slot that rugby should be in. I don't want to see German third division football. I want to see some proper obscure sports going on. I want to see that the game that they play in Kazakhstan, where they all ride on horseback and kick around a dead goat's carcass.
Borat, wasn't it?
No. It's an actual sport. The Kazakh national sport. Yep. I want to see all that kind of stuff on telly. But you can only do that by having straight knockout first.
There are certain areas of Cornwall where they play that as well.
Down on the Roseland.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, it's very clear that, well, other than Doug, obviously, whose answer was the best one, that you're all in favour of a certain type of knockout rugby instead. But Russ, let's hear your answer.
Well, I'm actually going to elaborate a little bit on what Ben just said, because to incorporate in what he said around the biannually European rugby competition. What I'd like to see is in between those years, I'd like to see some sort of competition involving the Super Rugby sides. So we had some kind of world club championship, because I'd like nothing more to see the Styles of Exeter go up against the Crusaders, or the Chiefs versus Harlequins, or, you know, Brisbane versus Saracens, two second rate sides. And although Queensland is Brisbane, isn't it, Phil? Is that right? Queensland Reds?
That is correct. That is correct.
Sure.
Anyway, there. So, but yeah, so some second rate teams I'd like to see go together, like Melbourne Rebels and London Irish, for instance. But yeah, I just think the styles of play are so wildly different across the hemispheres that it would make for a really good competition, and it could be hosted like opposite sides of a World Cup in a Lions year, maybe, or, you know, wherever the Lions are playing, host it there and have a load of those players, not necessarily involved, but have a big old tour and make it a real event.
There we go. I better be careful here. This might descend into actual rugby content and analysis. It's dangerously close to that. So we'll move very quickly on to question two. And we've just had the Eurovision Song Contest, which I'm sure we all enjoyed. But which element from the Eurovision Song Contest would you like to see incorporated into sport? In fact, Russ, we'll go straight back to you.
No comment.
It's a bold tactic.
It is a bold tactic. There are absolutely zero redeeming features about Eurovision whatsoever. It has nothing about it which I either like, rate, or enjoy. The fact that for some reason they incorporated Australia into it for a little while when it's called Eurovision means it's an absolute shit show.
They're still doing that, but Australia didn't qualify.
That's what I mean. Like, I haven't watched it for that long. It's that shit. And the fact that you can have a half-decent song, allegedly, I didn't even listen to that, and still get 0 points. When we were part of Europe, before Brexit, we got 0 points. Then we decided to leave Europe, and we still get 0 points. I don't understand it, I don't rate it, and I find it utterly, utterly pointless. A bit like the European Challenge Cup.
There we go. It's like we've had Doug's answer early. Should we go to him? I mean, he might have something more cheery.
Now, rightly or wrongly, for me, there's only one answer on this, and that's anyone sitting at a bench or a table should be made to take cocaine, and it should be every cameraman's duty to try and film these people doing it as surreptitiously as possible. I don't think there'd be anything more fun than watching Harry Kane doing a line off of Gareth Bale's thigh at the on the subs bench at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Thigh wasn't something that I thought he would say for that sentence.
Kane's got the hooter for it, though, hasn't he?
I tell you, I've got the hooter for it of Vincent Rattes. But that's another story.
All right, Phil.
So I would like, and I had this thought about rugby, but it pretty much applies to every sport where there's multiple events scoring. I'd like to bring in a political scoring system whereby when you see a try scored at the moment, it invariably goes to the TMO for them to look at it for 40 seconds. Scrap that, bin the TMO, and instead just have a panel of three international judges who decide how many points that try is going to be worth based on how much they like the country that's playing. So if you've got, say, South Africa versus England, I'd love to see a Zimbabwean judge up there. Just every time the South Africans score, they just take points off them rather than awarding them. But just, yeah, really push the political boundaries of sport's been fair for far too long.
Is that like having a Welsh judge? So England, South Africa, there would be a Welsh judge and a Zimbabwean judge in a box.
I think,
and then a true neutral, and then yeah, you've got to have a Swiss one there for every competition, apart from where Austria is involved.
Like a boxing scorecard where you get points for, like, throwing punches.
Yeah, and similarly to a boxing scorecard, where the points play absolutely zero reference to how well that try was scored or that goal was scored, and it's purely based on how much they like the country.
Excellent. Lots of points for that one. Ben?
I was going to say bearded transsexuals, but I thought that was too much of a crossover to Eddie's pod the other night. So I've gone for the sarcastic commentary as perfected by Terry Wogan and Graham Norton. So I thought, for example, Jay Dernbach stepping up to bowl the last over. Can he keep it to under 24? Of course he can't. We've seen him warming up.
I mean, I think if and when we do some kind of watch along with a rugby match, and we can do that, that should be our angle.
Why don't you tweet Jay Dernbach, Russ, and ask him?
I can't. Not allowed.
All right, quick look at the scores. Russ, you're last on 5 points, but that's probably because you didn't answer that question. Ben's on 19, Doug's on 20, Phil in the lead on 25. Right, next up, this time with Alan Partridge, got a second series, which is currently airing on BBC One, 9:30 on a Friday night. Check it out. We're obviously all enjoying that. But who is sport's greatest Alan? Phil, why don't you start?
Well, I did think of one, but I'm not going to say it in case any of you pick it up. But then I thought, actually, we're talking about Alans, A-L-A-N, and any other spelling really should be discounted. So just throwing that in for a start. But clearly the answer is Alan Minter, undisputed world middleweight champion, British boxer, 39 wins. Not only that, I'm not going to go full Wikipedia on you, but not only was he undisputed world middleweight champion, but he also killed somebody in the ring, which has got to stand for something.
I mean, it takes undefeated to a whole new level.
All right, Ben, sport's greatest Alan.
Well, I thought we had to go for a World Cup winner, so I've gone with Alan Ball, who played obviously for England in 1966. Played in 1970 as well, so quite long lasting. Was youngest player in the side. No longer with us. I haven't really got anything funny to say. I just think it's probably the right answer.
Oh, fair enough. It's also A-L-A-N, but there you go. With that in mind, Russ, who have you got?
I have gone for the prickly, diminutive former Australian cricket captain, Alan Border. Now, you know, we all know my love of cricket, and I'm not the biggest fan of Australia or the Australians in general, but there's no denying Alan Border's sporting prowess. 156 test matches at an average of 50.56. For a long time, he held a number of world records, most career test runs, until he was passed by Brian Lara. Most consecutive test matches, 153, which was surpassed by Steve Waugh and then Alastair Cook. Batted more test match innings than any other player until Sachin Tendulkar. And the list goes on. He turned Australia turned them around and made that team and that ethos that made them so dominant in test cricket throughout the sort of late 80s all the way through the 90s. And yeah, so for me, the great sports greatest Alan is Alan Border.
How's that spelled, Russ?
A-L-L-A-N.
Okay.
There we go. Right, we better hear from Doug on the matter, who has definitely given me an answer that I have to hand. Here we go.
Sport's greatest Alan's a simple one for me for a couple of reasons. He's won 4 world titles, he's run a Formula One team of his own, and he's also got the same middle name as his wife. So, Alain Marie Pascal Prost, the Frenchest man in all of sport outside of Michel Platini, I think. Yeah.
I do love can't think of anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Well done, Doug. Here's the points. obviously, it's A-L-A-I-N, isn't it? So there you go. Right, chaps, I'm going to now throw a curveball at you. I'm going to give you a question that you don't know about. Well, actually, strictly speaking, one of you knows about. And it is this, with animal... Well, after I read the question, just shout out answers. It's just going to be a quick thing, 10, 15 seconds, just as they come to you, shout them out. Doug's given an answer as well. So here we go. With animal rights activists blocking McDonald's distribution centres this week, who is the biggest whopper in sport?
Oh, fuck.
Israel Folau.
There's too many. Joe Marler.
Sam Lana. Sam,
Daniel Levy.
Yeah.
The Glazers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you points, Ben, when I've found my thing. Yeah, there you go. Very good.
Have you seen the state of Joe? Was it Joel Glazier? Is it his hair? Has he got like a bald head and a tiny little rat's tail? Have you seen it? It's just utterly embarrassing.
There you go. Right, Doug sent an answer for this as well, which I have. I don't have enough hands to do this job, but that's my problem, not yours. Right, Doug.
Biggest sport in sport? Easy. William Ports, or as he's more commonly known, Billy, born in July 1948. He was a basketball player, among others, for the New York Nets, Spurs, Rockets. 6'11", and his nickname was Whopper. So, literally, the biggest Whopper in sport.
Doug did his homework there. There you go. It's fairly pointless me scoring Doug, actually. I might stop. He's not going to get in defend the undefendable. That would be ridiculous.
But also, I'm guessing the chances are he's not going to finish last.
Maybe I have a defend the undefendable that I want to throw at you. Who knows? We'll see.
Who knows?
Not that this is fixed by any means. You know, I'd never do that. All right. Next question. We're finally getting the Euros. Euro 2020 is going to start soon in mid-2021. With that in mind, what's your favourite Euros moment from history? And actually, I'm going to start with Doug and get this, I was going to say out of the way, but yeah, get it out of the way.
Greatest moment in the Euros, definitely from Euro 96, one of the best summers of my life, probably best summer of most of our lives, to be honest, sitting around this podcast. But England 4, Holland 1, when the third goal went in, you started to believe, and then the fourth went in, and pretty much the lights went off in my brain, and I can't really remember a lot else of what happened that night.
good end to that, Doug. Thank you. I can't be bothered to score Doug's answers anymore, so I'm not going to. Right. Ben.
Well, I wanted to do Euro 96 as well, because Doug's right. That was the greatest summer of all time. So I had a couple of things in my mind, and I thought the sort of iconic moment was probably Stuart Pearce whacking in a penalty against Spain in what was a pretty bad England performance. We just about struggled to penalties. And I think the official phrase that you're actually contracted to say is exorcising the ghosts of Italia 90 and going absolutely tonto. And I think that was just how a lot of us were feeling at the time.
I have goosebumps just thinking about that moment, let alone watching it again. It's just incredible.
My best mate at uni is called Martin. He's named after Martin O'Neill. And his mum had a life-size Stuart Pearce cutout in their kitchen.
Just sat at the dining table.
Yeah.
Doing with that particular pose or that face, I imagine. Superb. Right, Russ.
I mean, quite obviously, we are all gentlemen of a certain age. And I've also gone for Euro 96. And that summer was unbelievable for so many reasons. I mean, I was, I was 14, and I found myself on a school foreign exchange. And I don't know if you guys ever went on these, you know, when you have a German kid come and stay at your house for a week and then you go over there and stay at his house for a week, like do a school swap. You do it as a group, so there's loads of people from your class. And I was in Germany for Euro 96. I was there for the England-Holland game. I was also there for the England-Scotland game. And my highlight was that sort of few minutes, that period of play where we gave away the penalty, David Seaman saved that Gary McAllister penalty. And then almost instantaneously, we went up the other end. Paul Gascoigne chipped Colin Hendry, smashed it past Andy Gorham into the bottom corner and went on to reprise the dentist chair, which I think was everybody's highlight of Euro 96. And Teddy Sheringham squirting that water bottle into Paul Gascoigne's mouth is an absolutely iconic photograph and one of the best moments of my European history.
Excellent. Let's finish the round off, Phil.
So, Russ is right. We are all men of a certain age, and that Euro 96 was a fairly big thing for all of us. But for me, what I like about the Euros is the fact is there's a degree of unpredictability about it. It throws up things that, I mean, the World Cup becomes a bit kind of staid and expectable, but the Euros throws up results that you don't expect. And teams, you've got Iceland and Wales in the last one. You've got Greece winning it. But the thing, the memory that sticks with me is actually 4 years earlier. It's the 92 European Championship. Only eight teams, which is great. Love a tournament with only eight teams. And probably the lowest ranked team going into it, Denmark, managed to scrape through the group with one win, one draw, one loss. Get through to the semis where they're playing the Netherlands. Nobody expects them to win that. They win that on penalties. Having drawn 2-2, Henrik Larsson getting both goals, get through to the final against Germany, and they have zero hope at all. And they go on and beat the Germans 2-0. And all of a sudden, you've got this kind of real interest in sport and expectation that the favourite isn't always going to win. And I mean, Christ, they had a hell of a squad. The squad that won the junior championship a few years before, but guys like Peter Schmeichel, Brian Laudrup, Henrik Larsson, John Jensen, just, yeah, fantastic squad there. But it was that kind of, oh, hang on a minute, it's not always going to be predictable. And that was almost what gives you a bit of hope, leads to the hope in Euro 96 that we could actually win it. If it wasn't for Denmark winning 92, I don't think we'd have had that hope.
Excellent. These points, by the way, are specifically for not giving a Euro 96 answer, which was...
Denmark weren't even supposed to be there, were they?
No, and it was Denmark that changed football forever, because after that tournament, they changed the pass-back rule, because that's what they were doing to keep the ball and waste time.
Yeah, but I love that.
Shithousery. Sports shithousery.
Absolutely. All right, Doug is on 25 and probably is going to stay on 25. Ben, 42. Russ, 41. Phil, 64. Absolutely flying.
I can lose it from here. It's fine.
Of course you can. Anything could happen. The platinum jiffy bag question is next, and you can get 9 bonus points if you match my answer. Let's start with Douglas again. I should read the question, really. Darren Stevens, he smashed 190 from 149 balls last week, aged 45. So the question is, what's the best sporting achievement from somebody in their 40s?
I think until this Sunday, one of the greatest sporting achievements by a 40-year-old or over would have been Tiger Woods at the Masters. But with Phil Mickelson winning this weekend, I think... Does that count, Phil Mickelson in his 50s? If not, I'm expecting a points deduction here. But Tiger at the Masters, not only for what an achievement it was, but also for just how amazing it was as a spectacle and how it gripped pretty much all of the world, really, not just golf people. Tiger Woods transcends that. And he's got, a sketchy past. I mean, who hasn't wanted to fuck the nanny?
Doug did expect a points deduction. I can't even be bothered to give him one. Ben, sporting achievement for someone in their 40s.
Well, it did strike me that we could have just all picked managers, but I thought that was probably not in the spirit of the rules. So I felt I had to go with sports greatest 40 plus in what's actually still a fairly physical sport, not golf. I've gone with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he'd won more Super Bowls than was decent before 40. And he looks on course to win the same number again, which is absolutely incredible. I know he's not to everyone's taste as a person, but on the pitch, he is pretty much untouchable, I'd say. And he looks like he might play till he's 50.
I mean, technically, it's an amazing answer, and it's an amazing achievement for him. But it's Tom Brady. It's just I can't give that too many points. Russ,
what if I say he's just giving everybody a chance to snap him in half at the age of 50 when his bones are brittle?
You're just going to lose more points. There you go.
just keep talking. I'll talk over you.
That'll get you some back, obviously. Any Partridge reference will do that. Russ?
My answer, the greatest sporting achievement for a person in their 40s, there can only be one, and an absolute legend in my eyes, even though he did leave Tottenham to join Manchester United at some point, and that is Edward Paul Sheringham. Nice. He had a glittering career, obviously scored that Champions League goal, not in his 40s, but he was the oldest outfield player to appear in a Premier League match and the oldest player to score in a Premier League match at the age of 40 years and 268 days. He then also went on to play for Colchester at the age of 42 in League One and scored in League One at the age of 42. So, Teddy Sheringham, what a guy.
Decent. His management stint in Stevenage should obviously get a mention. Otherwise, I'd be cheating. I'd be cheating some people that we know well. Phil, who's your 40-something?
Well, so I think Ben's was probably technically the right answer, but was never going to do well. And Doug's got the right sport, but the wrong person. Ultimately, Tiger Woods is chasing somebody else's record. And that person's
not the only thing he's chasing.
Well, indeed. and that person's Jack Nicklaus. So Tiger's won 15 majors. Jack Nicklaus has won 18. Jack Nicklaus won 3 majors in his 40s. No other person has done that. No other person's come vaguely close to doing that. Absolutely dominated an individual sport for a massive amount of time and never really showed any issues when he hit his 40s, whereas Tiger Woods hit mid-30s and just broke down mentally and physically and has pretty much worn his penis down to a little nub. So, like, how you can pick Tiger Woods over Jack Nicklaus, I've got no idea.
Absolutely. All right, next up, pretty simple question. You may have seen it teased on
Who's in the Jiffy bag?
One, I don't think we've ever done a show when I've remembered that. I mean, there are a few names that sprung to my mind. Roger Miller, but actually nobody really knew how
John
old
Embury.
Roger Miller was. John Embury. But this is, I mean, in fact, one of you said, I think Russ, about Teddy Sheringham, you know, playing a proper sport. As a striker, I'm going for another proper sportsman here, and that's Mark J. Williams, who at the age of, I think, 43, won his third World Snooker Championship in a final that was contested by two men in their 40s in 2018. John Higgins.
I mean, Adam, with the greatest respect, fuck off.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Russ. A proper sport.
Simon, you know, the chat, anything could be in the platinum Jiffy bag, quite frankly.
Excellent.
I do like my snooker.
It's like picking a darts player.
No, yeah, that's not going to happen. That's not a proper sport. Although, you know, it pays some of Doug's wages and it stops him from being here as well. Right, next up. As I say, you may have seen it teased on Twitter, but what's the most stupid thing you've ever seen somebody do in a sporting arena or sporting pitch, whatever? Let's go straight back to you, Phil.
So I'm going to take you to the Open at Carnoustie in 1999, where a certain Frenchman, Jean Van der Velde, is leading by 3 strokes coming onto the 18th tee. So 499-yard hole, hits his first shot out of bounds, hits his third shot, or his fourth shot as it was, straight into the Barry Byrne, and then decides that he's going to walk into a stream that's about 18 inches deep, take his shoes and socks off, roll his trousers up, walk into the stream, and think about whether he can hit this ball off the bottom of an 18-inch deep stream. Now, I struggle hitting a ball that's at the bottom of 2 inches of grass. So what made him think he's going to ever have the wrist strength or the power to get this out of a load of water? I've got no idea. Tears ensued. There were harsh words from his caddy after about 10 minutes of pissing about. He finally decided that it was absolutely bonkers. Went back, chipped up, triple bogey. So ended up in a playoff and threw away the Open.
That is the perfect answer, because you can excuse stupidity a little bit on a football pitch, a rugby pitch where it's heat at the moment, but on a golf course where you can step back and consider your actions over the course of several minutes, just incredible levels of stupidity. Ben, who have you got?
So, like a lot of university towns in Bristol, there's a varsity match between Bristol Uni and UWE. And it was always played at the Memorial Ground where Bristol Rugby Club and Bristol Rovers both used to play. And it got a decent crowd, sort of 4,000 or 5,000. And my third year at uni, we went to watch because one of my housemates was captain of the men's team. And the sort of curtain raiser was the women's game. And it was 5-0 to Bristol with about 5 minutes to go. Bristol put a kick into the UE 22 and the UE fullback fielded the ball, took off and beat 4 or 5 tackles by the halfway line, beat the opposition fullback, went straight under the posts. Now, unfortunately, I imagine she wasn't used to playing in front of 4,000 or 5,000 people. So rather than putting the ball down, she just stood and stared at the crowd and put both arms in the air with the ball under one elbow. And
touchdown.
About 2,000 supporters just all shouted, "Put it down!" And the Bristol fullback just snuck up behind her, tackled her, hit her in the back, and it ended up 5-0 to Bristol.
Amazing. Russ, what's the most stupid thing you've seen?
I mean, there are loads, and thanks to the people that got involved on Twitter. I know Ben Bacon sent through a couple of things. Ruth sent a couple of things through. There's Ben Botica, who kicked it directly to when he was playing for Harlequins. I think it was...
You don't need to elaborate on that. We might hear about him in a minute.
Right, okay. Well, I definitely won't elaborate about him. There's the Usain Bolt being run over by a cameraman after winning Olympic gold. That was pretty decent. But for me, the stupidest thing, and it couldn't have happened to one of the nicest guys in rugby, Clement Poitrineau, Wasps 2004 Heineken Cup final. I think it was 2004. Need to remember my my maths and my...
Your maths?
My dates. Well, my counting back. Who was, in the last couple of minutes of the Heineken Cup final, waited for that ball to bounce so he could dot it down for a 22 dropout rather than dealing with it effectively, only for Rob Howley to sneak in and literally sneak the cup for Wasps from right under his very French nose. So, you know, in my mind, you've just got to deal with a situation and then take it from there, not wait and then give people a chance.
That would
be the most stupid one if another French player hadn't have done exactly the same thing a few years later.
Yeah, exactly.
Against England in the World Cup semi-final.
Yep. That was, oh God, fucking hell, what was his name? Mamos? Was it Mamos? Or who's the one that everybody hates, including us? I can't even remember his name now.
That doesn't narrow anything down.
Fucking hell. The dirty one.
I know who you're thinking.
That doesn't narrow much down, does it?
Not Huge, eh?
Huge, yeah. That's it.
What do you think Doug's going to say?
No, it was Damien Trai.
Good. I'm guessing then Doug's going to talk about Ben Botica.
Let's find out. Let's try that again.
clock goes red, you're at home in front of your fans, all you've got to do is boot it out. So what do? You punt it to the opposing fullback. Three passes later, Northampton are under the post and Harlequins lose a premiership match that they should have won, and Northampton win a match they should have lost. You'd think that that would be enough for Ben Botica for the stupidest thing that's ever happened on a rugby field. But no, he compounded that by doing it again in a European final barely 3 weeks later. An absolute muppet who was dispatched to the French second division swiftly thereafter.
That's actually... Van der Velde's a good answer. That might be the best one, just for the fact he's done it twice. there aren't many things on a rugby field that I feel that I could do, but boot the ball out when the 80 minutes are up, I think would be one of them. There you go. Okay, a very quick look at the scores. Doug's doesn't matter. Ben 61, Russ 59, Phil on 88. You've got to really, really mess this up to not be in defend the undefendable. Right, a 50-year-old, as Doug touched on earlier, a 50-year-old Mill Fickleson.
Get me a 50-year-old Mill, but use those exact words.
Hi, I'm Brian Habana, and this is the Mall Over Cup. Right, Phil Mickelson has just won his sixth major at the age of 50. Not that that matters, apparently. But who is sport's greatest lefty? And I'm going to go straight back to Doug, because then I can stop looking at these voice recordings.
Three words, Brian Charles Lara.
There we go. Decent. Right, Ben.
Three words. Diego Armando Maradona. I mean, in terms of his reputation in England, I'm not going to hold a grudge 35 years later. I think we're probably over it, and the man's dead. So, needless to say, we had the last laugh. you know, people... Now talk about Messi, but Maradona could do what Messi can do while simultaneously being kicked up in the air by every central defender from Buenos Aires to Barcelona.
Can Messi do it while he's absolutely messed up on coke? I don't think he'll ever prove that.
Who knows? We'll never know. And Maradona pretty much single-handedly took him to two World Cups, and you know he's probably the greatest footballer of all time. And he was left first, so. That's my vote.
There we go. All right, Phil.
Four words. Sir Alistair Nathan Cook.
Ah, oh, come on.
Get off of Adam's dick.
Nearly 12,500.
Is your defend the whatever we're calling it this week going to be how much you love the Tennessee Titans?
It could be. I don't know. 12,500 test runs at an average of 45. I'm just going to read out just one short section of what is an amazing career here. England's most capped test player, England's record test as captain, leading run scorer in test matches for England, youngest player ever to get 12,000 test runs, record 33 test centuries for England, first England player to take part in 50 test victories. There you go.
Adam, for our listeners, what shirt are you wearing?
It's an Essex Eagles T20 shirt.
No,
By the way, I don't have a sound effect for it because it's never come up, but I am just going to award Phil 100 points.
I can still screw this up.
You literally can as well. Right, Russ, sports greatest lefty.
So I'm not going to spend too long answering this question based on the fact that Phil's just been given 100 points for basically sucking you off. So I'll give you four words and a title. I don't even know what you'd call it. George Herman Babe Ruth Jr. The sport's greatest lefty. Baseball, probably the all-time great in baseball. 714 home runs, 2,213 runs involved in. Including pitches and outs in baseball. I mean, baseball is a...
Yeah, Russ, what do any of these stats mean?
He was good at baseball, mate. Very good at baseball.
And he's got an ERA of 337.2.
He did.
We can all just make up...
Well, I'm not
making that. What does ERA stand for?
Who knows? Wikipedia will tell you.
And run average.
And also, they named the chocolate bar after him. So, you know, that's pretty decent.
What, the Snickers?
Yeah.
Very good. Right, there
the
we
brand
go.
Brand name, you fool.
Right, any other business time? Let's see who's trailing. It's Doug. Doug hasn't got any. Next up, you're only 3 points behind Ben, incredibly, Russ. So you could sneak into defend the undefendable if you've got a really good any other business. So let's hear it.
Premier League football season's just finished. And I'm, as a Tottenham Hotspur fan, I am disappointed to hear in the media and media rumours about Harry Kane wanting to leave Tottenham. One thing that disappoints me about footballers and sport in general is when people make this sort of desire public. And I think that, you know, whilst he hasn't come out and said it, he's leaked enough to the press and there's enough rumours going around to suggest that, you know, it's what he actually wants. Now, if that's the case, then he should be allowed to leave and he deserves to leave. You know, he's given his all for Tottenham and people like Daniel Levy have basically fucked him and fucked every manager that Tottenham have had in the last 10 years. But, you know, I just think the media are one thing, but players should hold themselves in a little bit of decorum and conduct themselves accordingly. I'm not saying that Harry won't, but you just got to look at people like Christian Eriksen, you look at players that have forced their way out of clubs by downing tools and just being general dicks.
Oh, I just look at Julio Jones right now in the NFL.
Absolutely. Yeah. It just leaves a real bitter taste. And it makes you think, actually, as a supporter of a club that might be going, that these players might be going to, do you actually want that type of person at your club that's going to conduct themselves in such a way that, you know, makes themselves look like a bit of a spoiled, arrogant twat? I'm not saying Harry Kane is a sport arrogant twat, by the way. I just, you know, it led on to a wider point about sportsmen, you know, downing tools and, you know, wanting to get out of contracts and shit like that.
It's fine because Poch is coming back and he's going to persuade him to stay. Ooh, because, do you know why?
Ooh, he's magic.
He is magic.
You know.
Mauricio Pochettino. Right, sorry, Ben.
Did I tell you how much I love Alistair Cook? so I discovered an unusual thing last night. I was just about to go to bed and I thought I'd put the dog.
You want to get that checked?
I opened the door. I thought I'd let him go out and do his business outside, and he wouldn't go out, and finally sort of ventured out the door, and there was a noise, and he sprinted back in. And he spent the next 3 hours highly agitated, barking. I was up till 2 a.m. Turns out he's scared of owls.
You should take him. I know a cracking owl sanctuary.
So, there was an owl in the vicinity. And, he was not impressed at all. He wouldn't go anywhere near the middle of the garden in case he got picked up. So there you go. Spaniels and owls don't mix.
I've just realised that those points I just gave you put you level on Russ. Oh well, I'll figure that out in a minute. If one of you opens your mouth at some point, we've got Phil's any other business.
Great.
There you go. You're in the final, Ben. Phil, any other business? I mean, you could belch into the microphone. It doesn't really matter at this point.
Yeah, no, I've actually got something really important to say. So, brief timeline. 2nd of May. Yeah, 2nd of May, I get sent an electricity bill due to be paid by the 8th of May. 5th of May, I try and pay said electricity bill, but the payment portal is not working, so I can't pay it. 12th of May, I try to pay again. It's not working. I set up a direct debit. 25th of May, i.e. today, the electricity company tried to take out a county court judgment against me for not paying my electricity bill. So, wow. As far as I'm concerned, Symbio Energy, you can fuck right off. So, as soon as this is sorted, I'm changing electricity supplier and I'm never going to use you again, you dicks.
There we go. It's no shock to anybody. Phil, you are in Defend the Undefendable with 208 points. Doug is on 25. Russ is on 83. Ben on 88. We'll join you there. Because we would like to make this show slightly different to something else, I'm going to ask second place if you would like to go first or second with Defend the Undefendable. So, Ben, first or second? With you, for your, you'll have 22 seconds to defend something, basically. You know how this works.
I think I'll go second.
Okay, you can go second. Phil, I'm going to give you... In fact, I wanted to give this to Russ, but you're going to defend it instead. 22 seconds. They should simply bin the next Euros qualification and just stick the top 24 into the tournament from the Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, obviously they should, because all of these qualification games, all they do is they take the players away from the Premiership, where they're going to get injured, or the Ligue 1 or the La Liga. Whereas what we want to do is we want to see those players playing for their clubs. The only time we ever want to see them playing for the country is in a major championship. Plus, more importantly, if it's top 24, England aren't there. No hope.
There we go. Time's up. You use the word Premiership to describe football in your answer. So you're not looking favourite.
I think that's the same mistake I made last time that cost me.
Ben, the gate receipts that four clubs finally received from hosting League Two playoff semi-finals should be used to pay for Boris Johnson's wedding.
Well, Boris is a great man, isn't he? And he's hard up. These clubs, they've got attendances of at least, 300, 400. Boris probably only wants 120 at his wedding. He's a modest man, and I think working people from the north should be made to pay for Etonians' weddings, which they probably do already.
There we go. It turns out it doesn't matter the fact that you got 100 points, Phil. Ben is going to win this week's Punching Chat. Congratulations.
Incredible. Well done. Adam, thank you very much. Great fun as always.
Pleasure.
I still haven't broken my duck.
You've not won a punching chat yet.
Never won a punching chat.
you think the host would have noticed that level of oversight. I'd hate for that to become a thing, like me coming last.
Doug came last, let's be clear.
Oh yeah. Sorry, came last.
At least she turned up, Russ.
Yeah. So I mean, who knows? Once the rugby season's finished, if it ever finishes, we might plug the gap with some punching chat during the summer. Or you never know, there may be rumours of another podcast conglomerate resurrecting in the long leg podcast during the cricket season. Who knows? But yeah, Adam, it's been a pleasure again. Thank you for coming back and doing some questions and hosting the punching chat, where you've got other places to be right now. And Phil and Ben, I will talk to you next week. The return of the Premiership, three games left before the semi-finals. So extra Bristol and two others. Let's see what happens. To all the rest of you, it's been a pleasure and go well. Podcast Network.